I think we ought to go over this one slightly in the scripture itself and look at the important spiritual points as they come up. This is 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And as we read this, let's see that we're talking now about something within ourselves which is bothering us. This problem, which is so big that it's 6 cubits and a span. And as we think about our problem, it gets bigger. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head. He was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. There's just no way to get through this problem. It's really an impregnable problem. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs and a target of brass between his shoulders. No matter where you go to wiggle out of the problem, it stands and faces you. It's a complete problem. Your human mind has no capacity to figure out how to meet this total problem. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried. And now your problem is beginning to talk to you. You've just been fearing it up to now. Now it's really going to get you. It's in the second stage. It's working on your emotions. And he stood and cried upon the armies of Israel, unto the armies of Israel, and said to them, "Why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you. Let him come down to me." And so the problem is forcing you to meet it. The problem says, come on, do something. And you are trying to find out, what am I going to use to meet this problem with? If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will he be your servant. We will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. In other words, you know that if you lose, your life is going to change in the wrong directions. This problem is saying that it has the power to change your life for the worst. You're becoming totally involved now in the belief that this thing that's happening is happening. And unless you have got the knowledge of the presence of God, the reality of God, the onlyness of God without opposite, this thing begins gnawing, gnawing, gnawing deeper, 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 and there's nothing in you that can stop it. It runs a hole right through you until you're a wreck. And finally, it just tramples all over you. You're not meeting it with truth. You're meeting it with argument, with fear, with worry, with the mind darting hither and there, trying to figure out how you're going to escape or overcome. And all this time, all that is needed is the little stone of truth. God is here, friend. Now you go ahead and lick God if you want to fight. And that God which is here is my spirit. Now in all of Israel, there's nobody to declare this. There's only Saul, the king. And Saul represents not the power of physical force, but the power of physical mind. And he's trying to figure out, what are we going to do about this Goliath? He's using his mental ingenuity to try to cope with the situation. And that's what you're doing within yourself. You're calling on Saul to meet Goliath, and Saul doesn't have any answers. And you have had many such encounters in which you called upon Saul, and he didn't have any answers then either. And here it's the same problem again, but there is one who is now coming through, a little shepherd boy. When Saul had, and all Israel had heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed, they were greatly afraid, and Saul then is the inner mind, which is really a two-headed mind because it is presenting the problem and it's afraid of the problem that it's presenting. It's that old double-headed snake in the Garden of Eden. It fears its own problem. It's like the head turns around, looks at the tail, and they both get frightened. And they're one and the same. There has to be some order in this chaos. Little David. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah. And we have a clue here right away. He came out of Bethlehem. Bethlehem means the house of bread, the house of substance. And so we're introduced now to the thing called bread or substance. There's another to come out of Bethlehem later too. And this house of substance is the only way you're going to meet Goliath. You must have substance. You can't do it with the intellect, the reason, the logic. You can't do it with human planning. Because the very mind which is presenting the problem is going to try to do the human planning. You're falling into the trap of using he who is presenting the problem to meet the problem. And that's why we fail in our problems. We need substance. We have to go to Bethlehem. And so David comes out of Bethlehem, the house of bread, divine bread. His name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And so Jesse, the father of the 8 sons, out of Bethlehem, you'll find later that Luke goes out of his way to prove that Jesus came out of the stock of Jesse, while at the same time he's trying to prove that Jesus was the Son of God, not born of Joseph. He's proving that he came out of Jesse. And that was Luke's problem. He was trying to do it both ways, materially and spiritually, trying to please everyone. The 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. And David was the youngest. And the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. Now, instead of sending out your 3 eldest sons to fight, you're being told to tend your father's sheep. All of this is before the fight, isn't it? This is your preparation. And so the feeding of the sheep is the clue that this little David is being filled with substance within a vision, with a knowledge of the light of being. That spirit is all that is here. He is being strengthened with spiritual vision while all of the rest of the camp are figuring out ways and means to overcome Goliath. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. Now, the 40 days of the Philistine are also the 40 days in which you, the David in you, is feeding the sheep. And the 40 days means, then, staying in the consciousness of truth until it is crystallized, until the bread is leavened, until that substance is your consciousness, until you are spiritual consciousness, then you can go out to meet this fellow, and not the way other people do. Then this adversary, this Goliath, is going to meet somebody who knows what to do about him. Then you're not defenseless and helpless in the face of a problem which seems so unlikely to yield to any form of persuasion. And while you're doing this, you're learning, as you are living in the Spirit, you're learning that the problem is not what you had originally thought it to be. The problem was the absence of this very substance. The substance you didn't have in consciousness was the reason you had the problem. It's a seesaw. The substance is your inner substance, your light. And the absence of your awareness of your light teeters your seesaw so that you see the darkness. And now Christ is rising in you. And this is the significance of David. In the 40 days, while the Philistine is roaring, threatening, intimidating with his problem, in you is coming that inner light, which will so shine that darkness will be impossible. Jesse said unto David, his son, "And now take for thy brethren an ephah of the parched corn, and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to the brethren." And now there's more spiritual food, you see, the corn, the loaves. All this is an indication that he's being fed from within with more light, more light. He's being built up. And this is you. As you dwell within, you do receive more light. If you're putting yourself out in the 5 senses out there, facing the problem, you're not in the light, and you can't be fed this corn, these new loaves. You must abide in me. And so you're not facing the problem, you're facing the within, being fed from the kingdom within, quietly, silently. To an inner enlightenment which is going to arm you from within so that you won't need outer armor and outer spear. You're really a spiritual underground, because when you come into this inner light, the inner light of your being is going to be revealed as the inner light of the being called Goliath. You'll have him trapped from within himself, just by being in truth. And so we feel now that the light of our own being is revealing the non-reality of that which is called a problem. Goliath is shrinking before our very eyes, because light on the problem shows us God is present. Where God is, the power of God is functioning. And though Goliath still appears, the power of God wasn't shoved aside. It's there. It's functioning. In your new vision, you accept that power, and Goliath becomes a dwarf. David in you is going through this. David symbolizes your new awareness that light is the name of all being. And you are accepting that light as your being. David rose up early in the morning, left the sheep with a keeper, took and went as Jesse had commanded him, and came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man Goliath, fled from him and were sore afraid. Now then, there's just this one point in your consciousness, which is your hope. Everything else in you is fleeing, succumbing, letting the problem have sway as a reality. It isn't there. And only this little light of truth called David in you is aware that it isn't there. And the men of Israel said, "Have ye seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king, will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." What is the reward for killing Goliath? Kingship. But even that finds none who are ready or able or willing in your consciousness except little David. And David spake to the men, saying, "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" He calls him an uncircumcised Philistine. And that tells us that circumcision was a symbol of oneness. And the uncircumcised was a symbol of those who were separated from God, unenlightened, divided. The unenlightened, by David, are called the uncircumcised. And this unenlightened, separated from God, man is defying the armies of the living God? The little shepherd boy is saying that. All his brothers have run away. All of the armies of Israel are turning tail. And this little something in you is saying, "Wait a minute. Did God make that fellow? Did God make this problem? What am I running for? I'm hypnotized by a mind that says there's a problem here, and I know God didn't make it. Is there a problem in spirit? This glimpse of truth, can spirit have a problem? What's the difference how big it appears? Is there a problem in spirit? Can a problem outnumber or outfight the Lord of God?" And now you're beginning to balance the seesaw. Spiritual vision. Not logic, not reason. Spiritual reason, spiritual logic is beginning to establish a place where you can come to a point of equilibrium. And the people answered him after this manner, saying, "So shall be done to the man that killeth him." They had no answer. They didn't know what to say. And then something else happens. Eliah, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And this brother, Eliab, I think his name is, was kindled. His anger was kindled against David. And he said, "Why camest thou down hither? With whom hast thou left thou few sheep? It's only thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart. For thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." And so the elder brother chides the younger brother. And something in you will do just that. As this glimpse of light comes, the very opposite will come quickly and say, "Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled now. Don't soft pedal this thing. It's a giant problem." And so reason and logic, the elder brothers, those qualities in the mind that have been there longer than the younger brother, the memories of your inadequacies of the past begin to say to you, "Well, wait a minute now, don't get overconfident, or don't even get your hopes up." The elder brother, your past experience chides you, this little fledgling who thinks that there's no problem. David said, "Now what have I done? Is there not a cause? I didn't come down here, in other words, because I just want to, out of curiosity, there's a cause. There's a physical eye out here, and I am spiritual vision, and I'm simply appearing to show that it isn't there. And he turned toward from him toward another, spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again from the same manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, who was the king of Israel, and he sent for David. Now your mind and your will, well knowing that they have failed in similar situations, begins to turn to this fledgling in you, this little ray of truth. Calls for it. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him," meaning Goliath, "thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Here's your old veteran mind. All your experience, and this little upstart inside you says, "I'll take care of this situation." Saul, the king of your will, the king of your mind, is listening to the ray of spiritual vision called David. And David says, Saul says to David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. Thou art but a youth, he a man of war from his youth." And David said unto Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear. And I took a lamb out of the flock, and it took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." Now David says he slew a lion and a bear. Nobody knew that. You see, he did that while he was feeding the sheep. The lion and the bear represent qualities within himself that he had overcome. He had overcome the power of the lion and the power of the bear. He had overcome the belief in physical might and mental might. He had overcome materiality. The David in you, aware of the non-reality, the non-power of mental might and physical might, has overcome the lion and the bear, the normal human impulses to go out and defend. "Oh," said Saul, "you did that. Well, that's a different story. Moreover," said David, "the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." So Saul said to David, "Go, the Lord be with thee." Something reaches your mind and it says, "Okay, maybe you've got new weapons I never heard of, but go ahead." That vision becomes strong enough to convince your mind to let loose. Let little David go forth. Now, not by might, not by power, but by the Spirit of the Lord, you're willing to face this problem. And the old impulses are right there, of course, so David starts to put on the armor. The mind says, "Now, it's raining outside, wear your rubbers and take your umbrella." The mind says, "There's a giant out there, put on this armor." That's the habit of the mind. And before you know it, little David starting to do that. Saul armed David with his armor, put on a helmet of brass, armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go. That was just old habit. But then spiritual vision gets the upper hand and says, David said unto Saul, "I cannot go with these. I have not proved them." And David put them off. He's going to prove spiritual vision is power and needs no armor. David is not going to depend on material aid. Spiritual vision does not go outside and depend on the externals. Spiritual vision says, I am self-sufficient. I have an invisible friend called the Holy Ghost. He does all my work. I need no physical power. I need no mental might. I need nothing. Oh, yes, there is something I need. A little slingshot. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in the scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. 5 smooth stones. Not rough ones, not coarse ones, not the 5 physical senses, but smooth stones. The 5 inner senses of the soul, the knowledge of truth. Not eyes to look with and see Goliath, ears to hear him. Not those senses, but 5 smooth senses. Inner vision was all he could use that would be of any value. And he didn't even use those 5 smooth stones when it came down to the crucial moment. Why? The Philistine came out and drew near David. Oh, he went into hails of laughter. Look at this little fellow out there with a slingshot. He just couldn't believe it. This represented all of Israel. And he said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest up with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And then the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I'll give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. This poor little boy David, this spiritual vision that you go out with, it seems, oh, am I making a mistake? And what had seemed like an enormous thing before looks like it can crush this little bud within your heart. It gives you every kind of threat, every form of intimidation. It tells you how useless and small you are, how impotent you are. It tells you it's going to dismember you. And yet that little bud of truth within you learns to stand there and look at it and smile, and not even hate it, and not fear it, and not want to tear it to pieces, not even want to go out and fight it. You don't do battle with the giant. That's your secret. You don't do battle. You know the truth. You do what David did. You reach for one stone. The Philistine is still ranting and raving. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and give thee the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, to the wild beasts of the earth. You've heard it all before inside yourself. You've heard Goliath's threats. It comes in the form of other people, other agencies, other institutions, all talking through your mind to you, telling you what's going to happen. And then all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with a sword and a spear. David looks up. He hasn't the slightest bit of fear. He looks at this giant who is threatening him, and he knows the giant hasn't got a chance. He has now reached the point of absolute truth within himself. At this point, David is aware that there is no giant, that the problem was a myth, a total fantasy of the mind. It has completely disappeared as a force. Whereas before it was all of this power, the knowledge of the omnipotence of God is the growing strength of this inner vision. It takes complete control of your consciousness, and you know who you are. And then, David, and you can say, the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you unto our hand. There was a time after the 40 days of David when he was ready to go out that he went out and said, I am now ready to meet him for the Lord of hosts. And we see that the personal, individual sense of self called Goliath is always thinking of what it will do. But David represents not your faith in yourself, in your own individual power, but your faith in the omnipotence of the Spirit. Your knowledge that the power of God is what will express where you are, and not the power of the mind of man. David takes it out of a fight between two powers into the knowledge that only the power of God is present. So it comes to pass, when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Now from this point on, everything in the outer is merely the externalized appearance that comes from the newborn consciousness you have attained. It's all automatic. From now on, it's grace. You don't make a conscious decision. Just the knowledge of who you are, the living Spirit of God, and from that moment the Spirit of God does the work. You don't. It will appear as you. It will appear as David. He will do things, but he's not doing them. He's merely the outer visible activity of the inner consciousness of God. So David puts his hand in his bag and he takes thence a stone, a stone. He had five. Which one did he pick? The five have become one. The five inner senses have become the one stone of truth. Spiritual consciousness is the stone. The knowledge that there is one self. Only one being. Perfect, pure, here, now, God, and no other. No problem. No one to have a problem. David is aware of himself as the light of God. You become aware of yourself through this David consciousness that you are the light of God. And that knowledge becomes the stone which makes contact with the forehead of the giant. And he slang it and smote the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sunk into his forehead and he fell upon his face to the earth. The moment you know oneself, everything else evaporates which had been such a braggart, such a threat, such an intimidation, such a peril. And all of the consequences of it fade with it. The knowledge of oneself. One stone. The five inner senses become the one vision, the one omniscient self. And beside me there is no other. And so we have most of this story. There's a little more, though. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling, with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. And so we're being told, we don't fight a sword with a sword. We don't fight on the level of the problem that's coming into us. We find our five inner stones. We consciously turn away from what the five outer senses are telling us. That's the meaning of the five stones. We turn away from what the five senses are telling us, and we rest within. In our kingdom of God within, which is the five inner smooth stones until we feel the knowledge of oneself, one pure, perfect, immaculate being. We have now no other gods but the One, no other powers but the One, no powers to resist, to defend against. And so David had no sword. All he had was the inner knowledge represented in the outer by five smooth stones. And that's all we need. And that is the meaning of no power. That is all we need. Furthermore, if we need anything else, we are not in the knowledge of no power, and we will not be released from that Goliath, which is our tormentor. It is only when we can accept the allness of God in spite of the apparent tormentor that we are in the knowledge of no power needed. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof. Because David had none, he took the Philistine's sword, drew it out of the sheath, and slew him. And that's the end of your problem. And cut off his head therewith. And now your problem can't talk back anymore. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. Now what's the significance of David slaying him with his own sword? The subtle significance is this, that the power of evil, which was so great, has now been transmuted, and you find it's a power of good. That evil forced you to come to the state of knowledge that you need no power to overcome evil. That evil was good. To you it wasn't. It will only be good to you when you realize what it's done for you. Otherwise, you would never reach this high level where you can stand in no power, immune to all karmic law. And there'll be more and more and more so-called evil until you reach that place. Then you can do what he did. David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, and he put his armor in his tent. Finally, that has become your consciousness, a level, a new firmament. Now, I think we can clearly see that Samuel was telling us that there's a place called the secret place of the Most High, where you can be still and the Father within speaks. And that Father within will come to you as either David or Jesus or one of the prophets, but always as an inner impulse to lift you to the place where you can stand confidently. And as we look around the world, it's very true. We cannot just toss away our national weapons. Because this is not yet the national consciousness. And so we're not going around to recommend to Washington that they reread David and Goliath. They're not going to get this in 10 minutes or 10 days or 10 months. We've got all we can do to build that consciousness ourselves. And we cannot teach it until we have it. The other day, our mother said, "How can I teach this to my child about something?" And I knew very well that she didn't understand it, so I said, "Well, I would suggest that you learn it, and then you will find you automatically can teach it. But before you have learned it, what's the point of asking how to teach it? You have nothing to teach until you learn it. Until we are in the consciousness of no power, there's nobody to teach it. You can't teach it to your child. You can't teach it to your brother or sister or mother or father until you are it. When you are in the consciousness of no power, you'll find you're automatically teaching it because that's what you will demonstrate. Everything you do will be a teaching. There will be less Goliaths in your life, and people will say, well, how come you're not worried about such and such a condition? Well, I didn't feel that God made such a condition, and so I'm not worried about it. Well, there's an epidemic coming. Aren't you aware of that? Well, no, I'm aware of something quite different. I'm aware that no epidemic is coming. I'm aware that there's a mental hysteria about an epidemic, but God isn't sending an epidemic. How can it come here if God isn't sending it here? Is there another power? You're still wrestling with Goliath, aren't you? And so soon you're demonstrating the consciousness of no power needed. But you're not really an ostrich with your head in the sand pretending it's not there. That's for the one who's affirming and denying and says, it says so in the book, it must be true. You have made it your living consciousness. And so for you, it's the practical way. For you, David and Goliath is not preposterous. For you, any condition on this earth is just another David and Goliath condition. And then, of course, you know that Goliath wasn't just a physical thing. It's a symbol of all the other contingencies in the material world. The sum total of material consciousness summed up by the name Goliath. Always, the healings in the Bible demonstrate the power of spirit as infallible, as indestructible in the face of every material power. But always there was the consciousness of the truth that matter is non-power over spirit. And that where spirit is recognized, realized, understood, and lived in daily, where personal self in a physical form is died to daily, where the knowledge of spiritual identity is accepted daily, where Goliath is crucified daily and David is resurrected daily in consciousness, that is the pathway to kingship. The question comes up sometime, wouldn't it help me if I knew how Goliath gets there? What puts him there? Why does Goliath even appear? And you know, originally I thought we were going to do some of that today, but I can see that it's going to be a very special lesson. It's really something that I have hesitated to do for a long time because it takes us into a completely different place than the kind of lesson we've had today. I'm going to call it Cosmic Television, the method in which Goliath appears, problems appear, other forms of error appear. And although it's rather strange, I want to discuss it with you because I think we will be able to shed many of the attempts of the mind to try to understand this fellow Goliath. I believe you can never really reach that state of non-power until you have really convinced your mind of the illusory nature of all material form. That would be the purpose then of our little talk on cosmic television. I don't know if it ties up with chapter 6, but I assure you by the time our talk is finished next week, it will. And so chapter 6 in Contemplative Life, and as you read it, bear in mind that we're trying to learn through this inner contemplative meditation how to be able to know that Goliath is an illusion, that every form of problem is a form of a cosmic illusion locally accepted, and we want to know how these illusions get here. Who puts them here? What's the substance of them? What's the background behind them? And maybe when we know this, this mind of ours will be still and be willing to rely on little David, who by now is grown up to be the king within us, who will come forth as I, Christ. For finally, we find here that Saul the king says to little David, when they bring him to him after he has slain the Philistine, "Whose son art thou, thou young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. I come from substance, the house of bread. And the whole slaying of this non-existent Philistine was by that knowledge of truth which reveals the absence of the lie. That knowledge, which is spiritual awareness, is the kingdom of God within you, realized and lived in. And every illusion in the world, every imperfection, which is an illusion, through the substance of your being, when you know that you have come from Bethlehem, is revealed as non-existent. Then we too can say to Saul, to the mind, I've been born of Bethlehem. I come from Jesse of Bethlehem. And Jesse is, I am. Everything that I am is from the root of I am. For that I am, I am. And finally, the Christ comes forth. I and the Father are one. The substance is established as your being. There is no other. And instead of being in cosmic television, watching images of light, shadows, you're an infinite being without opposite. Your substance lives its life. Now, you know the four procedures then, the four steps. Impersonalizing means there's nothing, no one there. There's no dog there. There's no person there. The nothingizing is there can be a condition if there's no person or dog or whatever there. And both of these are done by knowing that only spirit is. Number three, spirit is my name, my identity. Spirit is everywhere, omnipresent. The omnipresence of spirit is my name. Therefore, my spirit is everywhere. Everywhere I am. No conditions, no persons, no people, no dogs, no cats, no anything except pure spirit everywhere. The kingdom of God. And it is where I am. And it is everywhere. I am in this omnipresence with all the powers of that omnipresence. And now rest in the peace of that. and you're at the point of equilibrium. The world can turn upside down, and to you it will hardly be noticeable. My peace I give unto you at this point. Not as the world giveth. This peace is beyond the understanding of this world. But it is not beyond the understanding of yourself. For it is yourself that gives this peace. And this is the peace that no power is needed. The realization becomes yourself. Every time you find you want to fight something or meet it in some way, it is because you haven't practiced the realization of no power. You can lose it in a flash, and I know that. You're going to lose it in an hour or two. You're going to wake up without it tomorrow morning. But that's where you must be, and so therefore you must establish ways and means for you to recoup this consciousness until you lose it less and come into it higher until the opposites fade away. Get that little card. Right on it. Only God is present. Or anything that came out of this talk for you, brief it. Make it yours. Over a period of time, you'll have 10 cards, 20 cards. And you'll find just a quick flash through. One by one, they quickly establish levels within yourself. They begin to work their silent leavening. They prepare you. And you'll find Goliath never comes to you when you are prepared. Only when you are not. Thanks again. See you next week, perhaps. Sixth chapter of Contemplative Life. Thank you very much.